Into the Nexus is a production of amove.tv. Bookmark amove.tv for other great video games and esports podcasts. Into the Nexus is sponsored by listeners like you via patreon.com/ITN. Greetings and welcome back, everyone. This is Into the Nexus, the podcast all about Heroes of the Storm. Garrett Weinzierl here as always with Kyle Ferguson. And we're also here, not as always, with a timely patch.
The cadence is back on.
Is it?
At least this one.
Let's start this. I'm going to start this episode with the declaration of a complete and utter lack of facts. We have no idea what's going on. This completely throws any understanding I thought I had of whatever a new cadence may be out the window. It's not a complaint. It's just my brain on fire. That's it.
Sure. But in an unprecedented move, the New Balance designer, whoever they may be, has decided to change the header image on the balance notes.
Is that really, that's what we're leading with? That's
bold.
We've got banned heroes because bugs are so nutty. We've got Blaze running amok. We got Johanna buffs. We've got one of the most long requested things we've ever complained about on this podcast for literally years getting fixed. And you're leading with what I can only assume to be a vector version of a weight scale.
It's kind of scandalous, right? You know, a new era is declared. The flag is changed. Lower the old one, wave out the new one.
A quick Adobe Illustrator tracing of the scales of justice is scandalous. I'm just trying to get in your head. Kyle, are you moonlighting on the side working for like the National Enquirer? BuzzFeed? What you got going on, man?
I've edited a few pictures of Bat Boy in my day, but no, I think this is pretty cool. Like, honestly, it's a new era. It's a new header. And I do think it's a kind of declaration. I like it.
Okay. Fair enough. I mean, yeah, historically it's always been that one random picture of Master Skin Chen.
Cause he's balancing his balance. Chen.
I feel like you pointed this out before and I have forgotten it already now.
It's a little obscure.
It is. I'm jumping in both feet first in the Kyle's conspiracy corner. Why do you think Tomb of the Spider Queen is the blurry background image? Why choose that? Of all of the things, it must mean something, Kyle. Come on, get your aluminum foil hat on and confirm the Illuminati with me.
Because it's a real gem?
Oh, look at you.
Listen. Ultimately, I think this is a much happier story than perhaps the most buggy patch we've ever had. Like, I simply do not care. I do not care. Because bugs happen, and the team has figured out a lot over the last year. We don't know what sort of systems have been developed in order to work long distance. And they have hit the switch that they haven't hit since 2016?
Hit the switch since 2016. What are you talking about?
Kael'thas was disabled while he was super duper bugged there
for a time. Hey, dude, that's why it's Tomb of the Spider Queen, because no other battleground has more bugs, literally, than Tomb of the Spider Queen.
That's so sad. I doubt that's intentional, but that's actually really Hold up. No. Every lane minion is a spider. Yeah, okay. I was going to go with Braxis for a hot moment, but you're right. Probably in pure mass, there are more bugs on Tomb of the Spider Queen.
Yes. If Braxis was Starship Troopers, then I'd be with you because we definitely call them bugs. But it's Zerg, sir. We call them Zerg.
Fair enough.
Anyways, I couldn't resist. I'm with you, man. Bugs, I'm like, whatever. Bugs happen. That's just a fact of life and a fact of Heroes of the Storm. So It's fine. They're fixing it. We'll talk about it more in detail when we get down to the affected hero, or should I say infected hero?
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was too. Thank you for confirming how good I am at speaking. But before we move on to the meat of the show, it's a big patch day, so we're just going to go through the patch. Let's also confirm the awesomeness of the people who are paying us with their hard-earned dollars, our patrons, over at patreon.com/ITN. If you like Into the Nexus, you want to support us, check it out. Get access to that Discord. Join us for our monthly game nights. And, well, we just really appreciate it, everybody. So go check it out, patreon.com/ITN. And also check out this week's Heroes of the Storm news.
We're on, boys! Let's liven up this place!
Point me to the stage.
Stay a while and listen.
Kyle, are you ready?
Yes.
Are you sitting down?
I am.
Because we're going over to the patch notes, and we're starting hard and heavy with Lone Talents being renamed to Gambit Talents.
All right.
I'm actually super stoked about this. It didn't bother me that much, but I thought it was really cool. And all it made me think of was our lovely emailer Wes's email from a few weeks ago. I believe Wes suggested Gamble Talents instead of Lone Talents. And you and I had some back and forth about Lone, Gamble, is there a negative connotation, yada, yada, yada. I love Gambit. I like that a lot. And I'm not saying I'm an X-Men fan. I actually have very little frame of reference for Gambit because my X-Men knowledge is from the movies. And Gambit was in the worst one. But I like this terminology. I think it was good. And I don't think you or I came up with this, or it came up in any of the conversation about, you know, Lone Talents sounding a little sterile.
Yeah. Clinical, maybe. Yeah. Void of fun, and Gambit is a fun word, a degree of risk, calculated advantage. But I agree with you. That X-Men hat, whatever the hell is going on there, is really gross.
Yeah. So we're going to start calling them Gambit Talents. I have a feeling, Kyle, even though it wasn't around for that long, I don't know about you, but I'm definitely going to mess up and continue calling them Lone Talents from time to time. So bear with us.
We'll get over it in time.
I still call Bruisers Knights.
That, yes. Siege, ogres, giants, like, we, you know, multiple terms for multiple things.
Indeed. But let's get into the balance, which the rest of this patch is. It is a balance patch. And it's starting with Blaze, some interesting stuff's going on. Dev comments said that Crossfire has always been a wildly popular talent, so we're bringing it baseline. And then they went on to say that because of the early addition of damage that's happening with that, they're comfortable pushing back his damage talent here and swapping it with what they refer to as his impactful tanking talents. And, well, that's exactly what they've done. So, yeah. Flame stream at, now baseline at Q. It has additional functionality that hitting an enemy with both streams of flame strike deals extra damage. This additional hit triggers flame stream's pyromania cooldown reduction as well. Crossfire's baked in. I've already seen quite a few blazes this week. How about you?
Yes. Blaze is feeling pretty damn good. And it's not only this Crossfire business. Interestingly enough, it's not actually running away with it. This sort of bacon is not on top like we might think of base range talents like on EDC in the past. This was competitive, 35, 34, and 30% across the board for the level 7 talents. However, it just felt good. And hitting both streams on things meant cooldowns, other sort of factors like the later suppressing fire, now earlier in the tier. Those sort of elements just made you play Blaze correctly. So I love that Crossfire is baked in because you should be aiming for that center hit anyway with both streams hitting one target in the first place. This means Blaze instantly has more lane clear, more camp clear, more teamfight damage. It's quite a bit, but it's not super duper easy to do. You can pretty easily line it up on like the big concave of range minions that might happen on a collapse on a keep or something like that. But if you're trying to manage, let's say, the gnolls on Alterac Pass, there's a good chance that they have too small of a hitbox, that it flies right by them, that you're slightly off. Against heroes, though, who have much wider hitboxes, Crossfire is going to trigger, and the damage is going to feel really good.
Yeah. Do we like Blaze? Is Blaze just a better lane clearing tank now than Johanna? Is that the world we find ourselves in?
It's a little bit of that. And that's definitely one of the big topics across the whole patch is who has the lane clear now. And Blaze certainly does. He's always had pretty decent lane clear.
Yeah. Give me a Mad Money lane clear stocks up and down, man. Who are we buying and who are we leaving on the draft table?
There's a chance, you know, with just stocks up in general, we're talking Garrosh, Stitches, and certainly Blaze might be the new premier lane clear tank. For my NGS team, I'm actually being asked to practice him as off lane, and then I will show up and deliver stuns and other sorts of control things. I think that's really where you should put your brain, though, instead. There is a chance if you pick Blaze, at least until the meta settles, that people won't know what to do with it. Is it an offlane bruiser? Is it going to be main tank? I'm not sure. And you might get another bruiser or another tank on top of it, in which case you can kind of say, well, Blaze will go do these other things.
Yeah,
his damage throughput is really good now, though. And the amount of control he exhibits on the battlefield with level 13 talents now at 7 is very impactful.
Well, now I just want to get weird and draft Blaze with Azul so we have extra push power and we have two pseudo tanks.
I think that's fabulous because then you have a very, very reliable way to hit your boost, which is, you know, always been one of Blaze's weaknesses, is that he didn't really do so much damage that he was a threat while walking away, and you could body block him in and stop him from boosting away. So let's talk about that a little bit, because at level 7 now is suppressing fire.
Yeah.
Nanomachine coating and fuel leak.
Yeah. Yeah. All the level 13 talents I got moved down to 7. So
that's a big deal.
Fuel leak has been the go-to at level 7 for a while now. Do you see any reason why it wouldn't still be a popular pick?
It depends who you ask, ultimately. Fuel leak is probably what we're all going to do at home for the most part.
I asked you, Kyle.
Oh, yeah, but it's a big oil spill that spills everywhere and leaves a trail. And even if you do it in melee range, you get some oil under yourself, then you're going to crossfire probably. Going to put out those flame jets. Flames are going now. You didn't have to use your oil. So there's a good chance you might pick this early, have healing for yourself, and then use your various oil spills around you and that beautiful can noise in order to control the battlefield and clog up people moving in other ways. I, of course, am a huge Blaze nub and just use alt cast to put them right under me. So that's something I'll have to recover from to become a better Blaze here.
Yeah.
Now, however,
Suppressive Fire has been a noteworthy pick. It hasn't been as popular as Fuel Leak, but it still gets a good amount of picks and the win rate is arguable. What I find interesting now is that since Crossfire is getting baked in, and if you're playing Blaze, you should be kind of practicing and landing both your streams from out the gate. I think that makes Suppressive Fire more attractive.
Right. Because when you hit with one stream, you get 25% reduced spell power on that hero for 4 seconds. You hit both streams, 50%, which 50% is kind of this magic number. It's what Hogger has. And that's basically kind of the range and spell powers, of course, healing. The other thing to consider is we are living in a world with a lot of stitches. And digestive juices also gives a 50% damage reduction. But you have to be in melee for stitches. So that is rather, you know, unique situations. Like you and I used it this afternoon for downing a Genji's damage dramatically. Because he was on top of us doing deflects and stuff.
Yeah. Oh my God. That was very, very, well, sexy. I never thought I would use the term sexy to describe anything that stitches would do, but yeah, as someone who was seeing how we're going to talk about later, the newly nerfed Vala was feeling, I was really appreciating the damage being turned off from that Genji. Okay. So what you're telling me, is Blaze is a solo laner who can show up and fight the front line while effectively disrupting the back line.
Yes.
So this is my new Sonya.
That's an interesting way to put it. Yes, I think that if you go with the new collision course at 13 that's available, jet propulsion collision deals 325 damage to the first enemy hero hit. So this is your impact target. It might splash on other people, but only your initial impact target is going to be receiving this damage. That looks pretty darn huge. You're looking at 628 damage in total from the initial hit and the bonus hit when you hit at 13.
That's a bit.
So that combined with things like pyromania that light yourself on fire, your oil spill that might be under your feet, the crossfire damage you're going to do in a big burst in the person in front of you, and your auto attacks, you're kind of looking in the range of like 2000 damage, and we're not talking combustions or anything like that on the other side. So regardless of if Blaze received lane clear and camp clear, which he did, regardless of him being able to solo tank, which maybe he always has, but always had these issues, Blaze is going to feel really good in the damage department now. And there is likely going to be a lot of Blaze players just because, like, when Diablo deals damage, everyone's really into it.
Mm. Okay. I mean, color me interested, man. I played a decent amount of Blaze when he first released and kind of just fell out of interest and haven't gone back. So, he seems to be checking a lot of the boxes that I like to have checked with heroes that I play. So, this is looking a whole lot like my next project.
It's a lot of tools. And of course you still have that unstoppable you can farm for at one. They went through and the pyromania cooldown reduction from regeneration globes reduced. So they're trying to hint you on the other talents. Some of those talents, like the shield talent, really, really good in kind of a QM situation where you might be learning them right now. Adhesive petroleum, that old grill and kill quest got moved from that 7 to 13. So those have now been changed around in order to be a little more impactful. However, the 13 to 7 switcheroo had no nerfs. And that's why we're staring at a really powerful Blaze right now as well.
Mm. Gotcha. Yeah, he's certainly feeling good in the little bit of experience I've had, mostly fighting against him this week. But yeah, we were kind of throwing some shade Blaze's way last week, man. So it's time to shut up and respect the fire bat. Speaking of respect, by the way, we should probably talk about Garrosh, who's next up in the balance changes. Into the fray. Is now baseline?
Yes. This is your one button ability, unless, of course, you did a body check and it was your two button ability. But anyway, since you'll get it before you even pick talents now, this is your one button ability where you could throw an ally.
Yeah, it was, according to Hotslogs, the ability that 80% of Garrosh players picked at level 7.
It's kind of a big deal.
I think there's two. There's one more ability today we're going to talk about that has basically the exact same pick rate, but later on. It's considered by many to be required. Devs appear to agree. In the dev comments, they said Into the Fray had become a crucial part of what is expected from Garrosh, so they're making a baseline. And then they're also mildly lowering the power of his level 7 talents basically to make up for the fact that he's going to have Into the Fray from the beginning of the darn game.
Right. Also because those talents got really, really inflated as they're like, please pick something else. We want to seduce you with these other ideas. And no one was taking the bait.
Yeah. So here it is. Here it is. Gadgetar in the chat room brings up a good point, too, is that, well, this makes sense, especially, you know, so far after Stitch is getting Helping Hand baseline.
So that's an interesting thought.
It's a similar, actually, I think it's a very, very similar type of, you know, the opposite of how an ability works, right? So who's left? We need to get Anduin to be able to pull enemies.
He doesn't unlock that at any point, but I get your meaning. Yeah.
No. Yeah. I'm making a joke. Please, for the love of God, do not add that to Anduin's kit or talents, please.
Well, so this is kind of an interesting one. So at level 7, they went through and the attack speed reduction on intimidation went down. Oppressor, this is your basic attack talent. Excuse me for not knowing these off the top of my head because there was an Into the Fray button.
Yeah.
Basic attacks against heroes reduce the target's spell power for 2.5 seconds.
Yeah, but they changed it now to a W talent.
Which is more just a picture.
Is it? Or does it now? It pops on. Oh, it's Bloodthirst also applies a spell power reduction. My apologies. I was misreading this. So they did add functionality where it ties into your W talent, but it retains its old functionality as well. Okay. That makes sense.
So at level 7, they also gave a new talent which affects Into the Fray by 20 armor. So Into the Fray had 25 armor on the thrown target, now 20. You can now take a talent, Loktaro Gar, which Into the Fray's cooldown is reduced by 12 seconds for each enemy hero hit and increases Into the Fray's armor by 20. So 40 armor for, let's say, you know, the ideal situation, you throw an Arthas at your enemy. It hits 4 enemy heroes. You now have an instant Into the Fray. And you could, over and over and over again, chain throw Arthas up and down and up and down. Granted, he's probably not doing anything other than having his aura on, but maybe that's enough. And deal a lot of control and damage.
That's a pretty extreme scenario. But I get your meaning. I'm just excited about the 20 extra armor. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah, 40 armor is pretty darn solid. I have two, of course, love the idea that you throw Arthas and then he's all the way over there now. So you pick up Anduin and you throw him, and then you pick up Vol and then you throw him. Like, you, it's not required that you keep throwing the Arthas in this situation.
So you just want to force your entire team to become a melee group.
Exactly. You get that whole team on top of the enemy, and then you eventually walk in there and, you know, land your taunt or something like that. So pretty darn cool for Garrosh. Of course, this is slightly a lane clear increase because he could throw something that's not a hero. At least, I think. Let me check. I don't think that changed. No, wait. Hang on. Hey, no, it's always been a hero. I'm thinking of the other throw.
You're thinking of the other throw.
Yeah, so this has to be nearby ally. Whoa, hang on. Okay, I'm in Tried Mode. Hang on. Can I throw a minion? It does say nearby ally. Why would I want to throw a minion? I can throw a minion.
Okay.
Lane clear increase for Garrosh.
Technically, yes. It also, I think, makes that. It's risky to use this when you have friendly minions around if that's not what you mean to throw.
Yes. You do have to wait for that little horde symbol of blue to be on top of them. And of course, the red for your earth shatter. Wrecking ball.
Yeah, we're having some trouble here. Anyways, some really cool changes for Garrosh. Into the Fray 1 just makes all of the sense in the world. And it's going to open up that level 7. Loktaro Gar, very early days. We only have a couple days worth of stats over on the Hotslogs. Not looking like it has a particularly impressive win rate. Let's give it some more time. But yeah, at the moment, Intimidation, almost no one picking it, but has the highest win rate at level 7.
I don't think there's going to be an outbreak of Garrosh's, though. Either you already like being a jerk like Garrosh, or you're going to be seduced by something that deals more damage.
Dude, I haven't played Garrosh in forever, and then our last patron game night, I ended up on him on an ARAM. I forgot how much damn fun Garrosh is. Holy butts, man. Ugh.
He is fun. Now, of course, eyes will turn towards Indomitable, his level 4 talent, which would be also another nice little unlock at 10 sort of business. But so much of pro play Garrosh comes down to knowing when to pre-indomitable.
Yeah, that's your talent into activatable, unstoppable at correct. Level 4. That is very, very popular. Let's see. Let me swap to it. But yeah, 70% popularity. That's quite popular. Thirst for Battle coming in with a 20% by comparison. And then In for the Kill. Seems like 6% of the population may have clicked the wrong talent, Kyle.
Happens sometimes. Hang on. I can already hear the emails being written. There are opportunities, of course, for In for the Kill. Bloodthirst kills reset the cooldown. You may do this on Infernal Shrines because, depending on your league, you might need the clear. And it was my favorite talent back in the Haunted Mines days.
That's fair. Haunted Mines, though, not in rotation at the moment, but I get that. And, sometimes you just get a weird comp. You don't have the clear for shrines. But let's talk about Johanna, one of the heroes that we got a bit of a preview for. I just don't think you or I expected the preview to be previewing a patch that was coming so soon. But I feel like we should have put it together last week after the Kofal kind of explained when we can expect them to get chatty. They're like, yeah, no, when things are like set in stone and the patch is kind of like locked in, that's when you're going to hear me start to talk about things. And I still was just like, that's nice. We've had like 3 months between patches. Okay. So like, I'm still excited and surprised that this patch came.
Yeah. It is an important note. So then when we see them talking again, we're going to get excited and maybe we should control ourselves, but help us out, Cobalt. We'll happily follow and dance to your rhythm if the rhythm remains consistent.
What if there is no consistent rhythm?
Then it's all chaos and it doesn't really matter.
We will be thrown into the fray of chaotic updates, which is quite all right. But let's talk about Johanna. We talked last week that Hold Your Ground's shield is going to get just baked into standard ass Iron Skin, and that is exactly what has happened here. Specifically, Iron Skin's shield has been increased from 674 base to 810 base. And then Hold Your Ground at level 4 had the shield percent increase reduced from 60% to 40%. Now, Kyle, in the notes, I see that you went and looked at how many times the Hold Your Ground's shield percentage has been messed with. And I'm so glad you did because, oh my God, I didn't realize how much this had been toyed around with.
It's kind of wild. Back in 2017, the talent moved from 13. 2017 October, it went from 20% to 30% increase on Iron Skin. 2019 January, 50%. And 2019 May, 60%. So they were basically trying for a very, very long time at 13 to make us click this button. And we didn't want to. We did not want to. So when they moved it up now to level 4, they've decided to bake in some of that shield and reduce this overall talent, which is a nice, that's great. That's a nice touch here. There are some issues still with Johanna that a lot of people see, but I think this is a great step in the right direction.
Yeah, this is, I think Johanna is an interesting case because she's doing well. And yet everyone I talk to is just like, I don't, it's a range from I don't know to actively dislike it.
I don't think she's awful. I do think that in our current hero design philosophies, a blind isn't exactly as powerful as it once was. And this is really highlighted by Cassia's rework too. Like Cassia had a place with massive amounts of physical armor during a certain balance time. But over time, that became quite useless. And now it's just flat armor, making her a way, way better hero, even though it's drastically reduced, I believe, from 75 physical armor to 30 now overall armor. But there's just some feels bad kind of hidden in here, and they're trying to improve them, but I don't think it gets rid of some of the core issues that people just don't like about the new rework. I do believe that the rework is overall an improvement, and she's way more active than she was. But that also means that kitchen sink aspect of just everything working exactly how you want it to went away. So since Expose, the healing reduction was increased from 25 to 35. This is your level 7 talent, where if you punish people with your shield, they now receive less healing. Basic attacks refresh this duration. So it's a cool idea. But you compare this to Hogger's Pummel and Blaze's Suppressing Fire. Spell power, I think, is what a lot of people want.
Yeah. And it's
punishing the healing received at the front line, right? So I get how it works. Your front line, Diablo's front line, you punish him, he receives less healing. But it doesn't do what we want it to exactly.
Right, because this is very specific in what it reduces. If it's spell power, whoever you're hitting, you're getting some value out of it in most cases. Whereas healing reduction, you may get no value if they are not the healed target. So 7 is strange for Johanna. And I think it's going to stay strange because we haven't talked about Steed Charge. That was another thing that was previewed, but we weren't told how Steed Charge was going to get spruced up, because this is something that you and I were both very excited about. It came out. We spent a long time talking about last week why we think Steed Charge is actually just not all that exciting in actual application. And this happens when you talk with your friend about things that sound exciting in your head that haven't been confirmed or denied anywhere else. What happened was it was Steed Charge. They're reducing the cooldown from 30 to 20 seconds, which, well, I was just more excited about literally anything we talked about last week that could have potentially been changed about this talent.
Right. It still has the passive of increasing the duration of Iron Skin by 1 second. The cooldown is nice, but the feels bad end to this statement is that the mount ends when the 3 seconds are up. So we talked about last week how you still get rooted. You can still be CC'd. You're not unstoppable. And ultimately, we kind of decided that maybe going through roots was enough. But the rest of those, being stunned, that should be fine. But ultimately, the problem with the talent for many is just that you mount up instantly. You ride for that short amount of 3 seconds and then you dismount. And that just doesn't feel right.
I to me, it's one or the other. It's the fact that you mount up and then can be like slowed and all of this crap can happen to you, or the fact that you dismount. I think one of those two needs to be addressed, not both. I'm not as hung up on wanting to stay mounted as I think a lot of other folks are. I would like just 3 seconds of being able to move quickly without being impeded. I don't want, go back to last week. I don't want full on unstoppable. We got into this last week, but
totally, totally. If you spend a lot of time on Urel or Cassia, the ability to instantly mount Hanzo has one of these too, just is a playmaker. And I think we want to feel that on Johanna. Though there is a great touch here, like Falling Sword had its damage increase because it was suffering from a bug where it dealt double damage. And it also did the double stun, but the stun was so close together, it didn't really matter too much. But double damage on that, so they increased it from 150 damage to 225.
So not
which
quite
is a double, really nice bacon.
Yeah, not quite double damage. I don't think the dev comment got into that. No, they didn't. But that's the kind of thing where I look at that and go, I think they looked at the win rate on Johanna with the bug and thought to themselves, huh, it's not that bad. Maybe Falling Sword could stand to have some increased damage. But yeah, so pretty, I think it's all pretty tame. I always get excited about bacons. I think the one on Iron Skin is worth getting excited about. Everything else, I don't know. I'm still just looking at level 7, like, impress me, darn it. Level 7, it just feels clunky. I think there's a reason everyone's taking conviction, and I don't think it's because they're stoked to take conviction.
It's nice to have something that's controllable, does exactly what you want it to. I mean, we're still avoiding the Lunara Wisp level here. Like, you get something, and something about it is a little cool. We just want it to be cooler.
Yeah. There's some lost fantasy, I think, with a lot of these level 7 offerings. But let's put this one to bed, Kyle. Let's talk about Mirrodin.
Tuck him in.
For what feels like the entire existence of quest talents in this game, and us talking about it on this podcast, we have pointed to Mirrodin's and used him as the poster child for everything wrong with quest talents, saying, look at that Mirrodin, stunning just the stun, playing wrong, just so you can get the quest done. And as was teased last week, that is no longer the case. The Stormbolt baseline quest is going away, and now you're going to get your Pierce at level 10.
much like Stitches, it's a blah and kind of happens on your screen. Everyone's aware of it coming online. It will pierce, but it also gives, and this is part of the 10, which I found a lot of people confused on, basic attacks reduce the cooldown of Stormbolt by 1 second and restore 3 mana. That is not baked in at one. That is part of the 10 unlock.
Yeah, which I can understand the confusion, and I think is a what I would consider a minor concern, but is a noteworthy concern for something being lost when things just are granted to you. And to me, I think it's, I don't know, it's almost more of an interface concern. Like I feel like this could be addressed in the UI. I don't know how, short of just popping up a text box telling you exactly what just happened every time you hit 10, with maybe an option to turn that off, because over time that would get really annoying.
It's an interesting little part of it that I didn't expect to ride with the auto quest unlock, and we didn't really take a guess that it would be at 10, which is also kind of nice. Murden really doesn't basic attack a lot unless you're absolutely just a skullcracker fiend and you lock onto one target and they stand still a lot in your certain league and you love that particular aspect of them. Also, post 10, there's not a lot of mana issues, so auto attacks will happen. And there will be more Stormbolts because of this, and that's a pretty cool threat. But I really don't see this being a complete runaway with it situation.
No, I think this is just, I'm just chalking this up to just better design. I just like it more. I don't think it's a massive, massive power increase for Muradin, but I do think it's an improvement in the overall design of the hero.
And they're doing something really nice with Perfect Storm at the same time, because, you know, Perfect Storm, if left how it was, you would still be stunning randomly in order to get more stun damage as you go. So I now they've made it the basic attack quest.
I love the dev comment on this, because they're saying they're redesigning it to, quote, reward both aggression and proper use of Stormbolt.
Right. So now if an enemy hero is killed within 3 seconds of being hit by Stormbolt, increase Stormbolt's damage by 10. That's when you'd want a Stormbolt anyway. And your basic attacks also increase the Stormbolt's damage by 0.5. In your UI, this won't move at all until you've reached one. So 2 auto attacks equals 1 damage.
Yep. So go get your Pierce on at level 10.
But there are some bugs here that people should be aware of, just so they're not confused. None of this is really game breaking, so I don't think anything has to be rushed or done about it necessarily. But for instance, the tab screen still shows the old quest. And if before 10, for some reason, using certain stacks of talons and whatnot, you hit enough Stormbolts, you will unlock Pierce early. However, that's basically hitting every single Stormbolt on cooldown. And that's not going
to
happen.
So out the gate, you need to start hitting people with Stormbolt and never miss one and use it on cooldown.
Exactly. You will unlock Stormbolt Pierce early in that case. And people can still see you, a number of hits you had over the course of the game. You know, maybe we'll use it to flame each other. I'm not terribly concerned.
We've
about
always
this.
Been able to, Kyle. We've always been able to.
Yeah.
It's
go blame a Kel'Thuzad instead.
Yeah, I think that I'm with you on this one. I think these are really minor bugs in the grand scheme of things. So I'm not concerned about that. Let's talk about Stitches, who's been doing, well. And according to the devs, maybe just a hair too well, because they said that Stitches is successfully lumbering his way through the Nexus, and that they think a small reduction to both his health pool and healing will be healthy without tripping him up in their minds. And so, There's some of that going on, but also some vile gas.
Yeah, some vile gas. Well,
one more second of,
from 3 to 4.
Yeah, one more second of vile gas.
That's a big deal, though. Like, let's not scoff at that too hard, because that sort of thing means any vile gas talent, if not touched in this list, did get an upgrade. And for something like your level 1, a very fun talent, Hungrua Patchwork Creation, gain 3 armor for every unit afflicted by vile gas, stacking up to 8 times, there's a higher chance you're actually going to have that. And your vile cleaver, vile gas now spreads from the slam. Putrefaction, vile gas heals Stitches for 75% of the damage dealt. All those sort of talents got a really, really nice upgrade, some of them in addition to other buffs to compete. And it's just a really fun way to play the hero. It's like playing Lunara Light.
I hadn't thought about that.
You're not going to kill anybody. And Lunara, yeah. Leaping Strike is kind of a lot of the go-to ways to play. You need to sort of switch it on to one hero eventually so you can actually get a kill with Lunara. But it's very, very fun to play top damage Lunara. One for you, one for you, one for you. Pop the button, one for you. And just maintain it and just look real good in the numbers. And Stitches can do that now.
Yeah, yeah. If you're wondering where some of the health has been stripped away, the max health bonus on Hungry for More was reduced somewhat. My understanding is level one on Stitches has... There's some solid arguments for basically all three talents. And that's what I tend to see is I'm never quite sure what level one talent Stitches is going to go. Nonetheless, Hungry for More did get dinged.
And understandable. I think that Stitches is in a really good place. There's a lot of really good talent diversity here. Tenderizer really being the only one at near 70% that is getting the runaway, and they reduce the healing on that. These are heals per auto attack. Beyond that, you probably won't notice too much of what's happening. Chop Chop got basic attacks against heroes refresh the duration of the Chop Chop, which is a lot of fun. But of course, being Stitches, you might not be pursuing as deep to maintain auto attacks. It's kind of that auto attack thing they're doing with tanks right now.
Yeah. I know you're a big Digestive Juices fan. What do you think about the cooldown reductions being not as reducey? Is that a word?
The damage reduction and the cooldown reduction, yeah, from 5 to 4 seconds. 4 seconds is plenty for that Genji, that Dove. And like I said, this is a melee hit to their damage output of 50%. So whatever they're going to do is usually done in 4 seconds. This would be very different if we were saying, oh, damage reduction. Now, Jaina, actually, people play melee Jaina all the time in Gold League, so maybe not the best example. Damage reduction to Rainer and Zul'jin, then he'll walk away and then keep going for a very, very long time. That'd be a bigger deal on a different hero.
That's fair. What about the level 20s?
Hungry Stitches got a buff where they now are slowed by 75% for 1 second after the gorge ends.
Yeah, it's only really a nice second, but that's a wild slow.
Yeah, yeah. So as you teleport about, so the way this talent works, if you're not familiar, because you may have been going Master Hooker, which is actually the favored talent in any sort of tournament play, if you could get your first gorge off, meaning in melee as your normal gorge, you would now teleport a short Storm Boldy size distance between the various targets, and you could gorge everybody in range, and then they'd all pop out at their various times based on when they went into Stitches. Now they're slowed for a little bit when they pop out of that, and it just guarantees a little more power on that spell.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I do think it's very exciting. Do you think it's exciting enough to take your gaze away from Master Hooker?
I mean, I love Gift of the Embalmer, but I'm also playing him a lot in Quick Match, so late deaths are a thing that'll happen.
Yeah, I find your comments about Master Hooker kind of being the, what a ridiculous talent name to just keep saying, but being a like the pro pick, interesting because I see it picked all the time in regular games. And the pick rate on Hot Logs is actually damn close between Master Hooker and Gift of the... Well, not damn close. Master Hooker actually is still the winner, but Gift of the Embalmer coming in second place.
And this is very much because of Focus Fire. In a tournament environment, your hook, which now has its cooldown reduced by 4 seconds, enemy heroes have had, I should say, 100% reduced healing received for 2 seconds. Now that's 75%. But if you got a pick in the late game and people were going to Focus Fire and help you out, particularly with like a Stukov in tow, there's a good chance that hero is going to go down unless somebody else did something about it. And that's what Master Hooker allowed. You are now reducing the chance that someone can do something about it outside of Divine Shielder and Wind Pools. So now there's a slight chance that healing during that time of emergency won't be as bad of a choice. But it's still very powerful at 75% reduced healing.
Mm. Okay.
Well, I mean, to truly be the competitive beast, Hungry, Hungry Stitches has to have everybody pop out at the same time, but that's a lot. That is too much.
This is one of the times where I really want to know what internal win rates look like because with what we have access to, it looked like Stitch was doing well and climbing, but he's just barely crested the 50% win rate mark. And so to see what looks to me like a noteworthy number of nerfs, even though they're all fairly minor, I'm mildly concerned.
It's the right time to hit with this. Stitch has really made an appearance this last week in the CCL. 2 weeks, so people needed time. In the HTC days, people scrimmed professionally all day long. And there was a 3-week delay, as I remember it, on any patch going into an actual tournament. Now these things are live, and the CCL has to deal with it this weekend. And we probably won't see the impact of it in about 2 weeks, much like that tournament Realm allowed them for.
It's a major improvement, in my opinion.
I agree, ultimately. I don't want to watch games that are on old patches. I get that they might struggle. There is a chance that, you know, a team that hasn't been doing well suddenly has the best Blaze in the world, and whoops, you guys, we're going to win all the games now.
Yeah, that is fair. But I would rather watch it.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's get into the Bruisers. Imperius, getting a little bit of love. According to the devs, Flash of Anger has overshadowed Imperius's other level 7 talents for a while. So they're buffing Blaze of Glory and Holy Fervor. But they're also just buffing Imperius. Basic attack going up 122 to 126, and Solarian's Fire baseline getting 10 more damage. So it's going from 100 to 110. So on top of the level 7 talent incentivization, we're getting just a baseline, albeit small, buff to Imperius.
Yes. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, you know, ding, ding, lane clear. Oh, my God. Ding, ding, ding. It is a little bit of that. So the new,
I think that's Holy okay. Fervor. Like that's definitely been a bit of a theme ever since the Johanna rework. It's thrown a lot of the Johanna rework and the Sonya nerf has thrown a lot of our understanding and a lot of our go-tos for lane clear just out the window.
I think this is pretty elegant, actually. There are still fundamental reasons why you wouldn't want Imperius to do any sort of double soaking. And in this case, they've added a really cool feature to Holy Fervor where you previously would press the button and it'd do the thing. You would now cleave and have this nice animation for it for a number of attacks. Well, now when you cast Molten Armor, you get two basic attacks of Holy Fervor. So you now cleave. This will knock out a lane. However, it's level 7 and 75 mana a cast, plus one of your primary survivability talents if you're going with Sovereign's Armor at 4, which most people do. It's going to just burn through all your mana. It's going to be an issue. But it's a really cool idea. Like the idea that you say, the enemy team is clumped. I'm going to do a bunch of splashy attacks, and I'm going to go in. I'm going to activate my button for cleaves, and then Molten Armor. Well, maybe you do Molten Armor, cleave, and then you do Holy Fervor button, cleave, cleave, cleave. And then by the time that comes off cooldown, you now do it again with your Molten Armor. But that's 150 mana. That's going to be really expensive. And what did I just say? The enemy's grouped? So why aren't you doing Flash of Anger? Why aren't you doing this whole Q build business in the first place?
That's a good argument. So I know we got a lot of bacons. Sounds like that's where your brain's going. You want Flash of Anger? Just bake it in and let's get interesting on level 7.
I think it'd be too much in its current form. Of course.
Well, I think
it's awesome.
You just got it talent later on?
I don't think I'm ready for that.
Okay.
Our relationship hasn't gone far enough yet for me to trust that.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
Cause there's still the auto attack part of it, right? Like back consume a mark from Celestial Charge, damage in nearby areas and give Imperius a shield. That auto attack incentivization of the talent is such a crucial play as to the way you play Imperius that I can see it being baked in much like our Crossfire, because you should be auto attacking after you land your darn spells on Imperius or you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Now, real quick, I want to go back to your concern, dare I say, complaints about mana issues on Imperius.
Okay.
Do you think they're actively trying to bring mana issues back into the game? Or am I reading?
What makes you think that?
Well, I mean, she's probably right back on her way out the door, but making Vala meta again was a mana starved hero. We're seeing a lot more Jaina. Jaina, you know, can run into mana issues. How's mana on Stitches? I don't really play a lot of Stitches.
Oh, it can happen. It can happen.
Okay. I don't know. It's just maybe it's just how all the damn Vala I had been playing, but it kind of seemed like I was back in 2014 where suddenly I cared about mana again.
I think it's a very powerful limiting factor, and without it, they would have just made Imperius a full-blown lane clear hero. And that is an issue he has that is kind of fundamental to drafting something that's Bruiser with such strong, almost point and click CC. Like Urel does her hammer, swing, charge up, has to take your divine button. You got Hogger, he needs a wall. You got the boost on D.Va, which is a mini stem, but also requires her to reposition. I do think that maybe this Holy Fervor could be lined up with Neil Peasants on Leoric, but, you know, honestly, Leoric's got a lot of lane clear in his basic attack anyway, and it would be expensive for Imperius to compete with that at four in the first place.
I think about half of what you just rattled off is fair. Like, I'm with you on the Leoric. I get where you're coming out on D.Va. But like, bringing up Hogger and Urel as a baseline for what is fair in terms of complexity, just like the two of the weirdest heroes in the game in terms of how you're supposed to play them correctly.
What I'm more saying is go take a look at the entire list of Bruisers. And think about who has a stun. You know, we got Thralls, we got Gazlos, we got Sonyas, lots of like, you know, mini stuns. You stood in the area. We got some Roods, Zul, and Thrall. But Urel, Hogger are the other sorts of stuns in this avenue, as well as Deathwing with his big, I'm going to draw a V on the line business.
It's also a lot of haves and have nots in across the entire Bruiser collection as to who can and cannot take a Merc Camp.
Right. And I think that Imperius is Celestial Charge at a full second and the damage throughput he has is just too much power CC for him to not have additional issues. So to give him lane clear without mana issues is wrong because Leoric suffers in the CC department.
I agree, Kyle. Li Ming should get lane clear back, not Imperius. Thank you for agreeing with me.
That was exactly what I was saying.
Yep. That's all I heard. That's all I heard. You heard it here first, everybody. All right, let's move into healers, shall we? Let's talk about Anduin, which I'm excited to get Kai Berry's thoughts on this next week because I know she's stoked. But according to the devs, Anduin not performing as well as they would like. So they're buffing his base power as well as his underpicked talents. They said that players have asked for inner focus, so they're returning it with a slightly different flavor, and they want to know how it feels to play with it. So let's take a look. Base kit got some changes as well. Pursued by Grace had its base healing increase. Flash Heal had its mana cost reduced and its base healing increase. And Chastise got a second knocked off of its cooldown.
All nice stuff for a 48% win rate healer who is a bit of a catch-all. Like our Lilies, people usually know an Anduin. It's nice to have the thing that isn't so complicated.
Man, first thing I did when this patch went live was I jumped in the quick match on Vala because I'm like, all right, looks like she got really, really dented. Well, I'm going to jump in. Doesn't matter what I get, I'm going AA build because we're going to talk about the lack of damage coming out of a W build here in a second. And dude, I got an Anduin that just babysat my ass for the whole game and it was wonderful. My damage was dumb by the end of it. It was the best AA Vala game I probably had in like a year.
I think it's really nice. He's got a really fun kit to play now, particularly with these more active auto attack sort of businesses going on. And he has a cleanse. And cleanses are kind of hard to come by. You got, you know, your Rhaegars and your Uthers and Lili, the lights of sorts of Bright Wings and Malfurions and stuff. But sometimes you got to early pick something, and Anduin's really, really nice to have in a functional place.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think in that way, he should be 50% win rate all the time. And Whitebane is perfectly fine down hanging out in the 46%.
Yeah, because you know there's a like a secret society of god-tier Whitebane players that have a much higher win rate.
It, like Chens and Genjis and all sorts of things. There are people who...
It's people like you and me that are keeping those win rates low. The people that don't know how to play those heroes worth a damn.
Exactly.
And I'm totally... I like that. I like that there's... When you look at public win rate statistics, there's these types of heroes where you're just like, take it with a grain of salt because in the right hands, these heroes sing. But yeah, excited about the Anduin changes as well. I've been finding him myself on him a little bit more and more, even though I would personally just rather play Lili, but maybe I'll be finding myself on Brightwing a little bit more because Brightwing got some changes. Dev comments starting off strong, making me recoil a little bit by saying we'd prefer a Brightwing that isn't as dependent on Hypershift, which makes me just go, oh, why? Why? But anyway, they continued to say, so they're reducing its cooldown reduction alongside phase shift's base cooldown. So, okay. So they made me recoil and then they kind of brought me back with that base cooldown change to phase shift in general. Soothing Mist also got, call it a gentleman's bump in its base healing. 105, 115, that's slightly less than a 10% healing increase on Soothing Mist.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, and then his cooldown was reduced from 100 to 90 seconds, and then phase shift went from 50 to 40 seconds. I do think that feels nice. On paper, it didn't seem like much, but in game itself, I'm definitely noticing phase shift. Like, I'm finding myself being surprised that it's ready again.
This is some interesting math, and I do wonder, what sort of notebook had to be constructed in order to come up with the 10 second cooldown reduction. When you look at Hypershift, it was nerfed. Cooldown reduction reduced from 1.5 to 1 second. So every lane you clear used to be 10.5 seconds off your next teleport, big heal. Now it's 7 seconds. However, 10 seconds off the overall cooldown of phase shift basically means you break even. So if you love the way you used to play, it's going to feel the same. If you wanted to pick something else at one this entire time, now Brightwing's going to feel even better for you, and Greater Polymorph, as well as Pixie Charm, are really, really, really good talents.
Yeah.
So you now I like take Hypership because you want the healing, not because you want the reduction.
Yep. Yeah. I love Greater Polymorph. It is such a fun talent. I'll be honest, I'm going to admit to this. One of the big reasons I like Brightwing is feeling like the most annoying bastard on the field because of Polymorph. Sure. And, Greater Polymorph just, it just increases that sensation. So, I needed to get my hands on Brightwing and get out of my headspace because I like Hypershift and I feel like they've been coming for my Brightwing a little bit recently, but I like this. I think this is a net gain for Brightwing.
And there's some interesting little upgrades too. They want you to pick another 7 other than Peekaboo. And so they're going to go about that by reducing the shield duration from 5 to 4 seconds, which is a blow, of course, if you're doing these sort of big pre-heals and then the fight would sort of dance around for a while before continuing its engage. But what might really excite a lot of Brightwings is the idea that Critical Mist, this is your activatable trait where you remove the CCs around you. This is activate to remove all stuns, roots, slows, and silence effects from nearby allied heroes. Of course, things that are reapplying like a mosh pit, this won't work on. But Critical Mist allows you to heal people when you use the Soothing Mist part of it. And when you
activatable pressing of D.
Exactly. And so when you remove one of those disabling effects, you now heal for more. And this actually, math-wise, put you slightly over the point of things like a Diablo Apox. So we talked about before in the past that Stukov Superstrain, you get stunned, you get more healing suddenly. out-heals most of the stuns in the game that would deal damage to you when they stun. And now Critical Mist has reached that point as well. So someone will exit a Diablo combo with more healing than they received during that combo in damage.
That I was unaware of that, but that's good to know.
But of course, they're not cleansed. You know, they're not unstoppable. Right. So they get stuck in the APOC, you get rid of it, and they now recovered from that instantly and more so.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Critical Mist has always had a fairly low pick rate. I mean, everything that isn't peekaboo at 7 has a low pick rate, but it has typically had the highest win rate. And I've always wondered in the back of my mind how much of that has to do with Critical Mist and how much of it has to do with the fact that if you're taking Critical Mist, you're probably using your D effectively in the first place.
It's a bit of an odd equation right now, too, because of Emerald Dream on Malfurion. And back when that happened to him, where he got the sleep on the other side of the route, Critical Mist only makes them sleep sooner, puts them to bed faster.
Yeah.
But they'll now heal more, and there's Magic Spit at 4. Basic attack range is increased by 1.1. Basic attacks against heroes reduce the cooldown of Soothing Mist. So there's a whole kind of build. If you notice the enemy team has the CC that you can actually remove, like that Diablo APOC. In this build, you also go phase out at 16 because you simply do not want to be stunned. You know, you see APOCs coming in, you can't move. So you need to phase out of it because you are going to skip the stun and then remove it from others.
I like that. I like that. But let's talk about these 20s because there's some interesting things in here. 3 changes to level 20 talents, starting with intensive wins. They changed the functionality where it no longer increases Emerald Wind's mana cost, which that's stunk, man. was a pain point for sure.
I did take it like on Cursed Hollow because the double boss situation that could come up, and you would basically hit the button 3 times and then have to hearth out and teleport back in before you could do anything else, because at 200 mana a cast, you would be completely out of mana after you were just
chunking your mana bar.
So let's take a look here. I got it up right now. We do a wind, still 5 seconds on it, so it's going to take a little bit, but at 75 mana, you know, 5 seconds in between, this is looking pretty nice. This is pretty darn disruptive. And with regen, I'm currently at 4K. I'll report back how many of these I can do, because I'm currently at 5 casts and I've got over half my mana bar left.
It seems like a good end the game boon to Bravely. Yeah. You're on that core. The enemy team is doing that coy thing where they're dipping out, healing back up, running back in, and every 5 seconds you can just be like, nope, go away. I like it. Fairy Protector at 20 also got additional functionality passively. Pixie Dust always bounces back and applies to Brightwing. And this is on top of the way it has always worked, which is activating to apply Pixie Dust to all nearby heroes.
Right. So that is a 2 button, or depending if you do bribe or not, but a 1 button. You will pop it in a range, everyone gets it, and now you're incentivized to throw out a shield on an allied target, and it'll bounce back to you in time, which I kind of like the little risk factor there. It's not that it bounces because you get it first and then you pass it around, like my lazy Stukov play, where I put the booger on me first and just hope it goes to the person I want. This is, you still need to be active to get the bonus, and by the way, a second later, or half a second later, you'll be benefiting from the extra bounce.
I'm guilty of that same Stukov play, by the way. Finally, Speedy Dragon is getting additional functionality where it reduces phase shift's cast time to 1 second. This is on top of how it has always worked, which is 20% permanent move speed. If you don't play Brightwing, she can't mount. So that's a nice thing to have. But you know what's even nicer to have is a 1 second cast on phase shift. That's pretty cool.
After 2 seconds being the normal go at it. So yeah, a nice little touch.
It's going to feel like crispy. Like it's going to happen so much quicker. So that's cool. I think intensive wins is probably the most practical of all of these level 20 changes.
Sure. We're competing with invisible friends.
which is still pretty darn attractive.
Definitely.
You know who isn't attractive, and it's not just because he's infested. No offense, Stukov. I'm not infest shaming you. But Stukov is disabled for the weekend after these balance changes that happened to him. I was not able to find what the hell the bug is, just the response to the bug, which is the fact that community manager Pez Radar posted to the Heroes of the Storm subreddit saying, hey, we're turning him off for the weekend. We're working on a hot fix for next week. We'll update you on the timing of that rolling out as we get closer to it actually rolling out. So do you know what the hell actually happened that made us turn off Stukov?
Yes. So there was a number of issues. Some of them were extremely minor, but Stukov was full of bugs. Basically, his level ones got a bunch of bacons from all around in order to make them more attractive, more interesting, and in fact, just more fun to play. And Stukov had a lot of power going into the weekend. But people started to discover that, for one, reactive ballisto spores, this is the old one where you used to take damage below 50%, and you'd spread a bunch of weighted pustules around.
Yeah.
Well, they got rid of that feature, which was really nice. They made an activatable button, so you basically could walk in and say, bam, everybody around me, weighted pustules for everybody. And while I'm at 50% below health, I now have bio kill switch refreshing 150% faster rather than instantly. This was a great, very, very cool upgrade. Stukov originally had to, in the tank Stukov style, let's just skip that conversation real quick. In a reactive ballista spore situation as a normal support, the enemy team would have a dive comp. They would dive Stukov. He would pop his bio kill switch earlier in order to get healed up. He'd take all this damage going to 30 or go below 50%, and then he could do it again, and everyone around him is weighted pustuled. In comes Tank Stukov into tournament play, who is basically walking into the front line saying, oh, look at me, hit me. And people were like, I'm not going to touch you, Stukov. You're going to spread weighted pustules all over me. Let's just ignore Stukov here as a tank. So he'd like run inside a Jaina Blizzard or go stand in this other thing that damaged so that he could get this double bio kill switch happenstance thing happen and get weighted pustules all over everybody. So in order to maintain the seemingly Stukov play that the devs like with the tank role, they allowed you to hit the one button and now you spread it. And it's a way, way more easy to control. And it also means that you don't have to go to 50% to actually have this feature. However, the one button seemingly disappeared at times, kind of like a Gambit talent, if you will. It just kind of turned off randomly, which, being a very big feature of the level one talent, that's kind of bad. But low blow, another level one talent, Bacon, had Lurking Arm deals 100% more damage to enemy heroes below 50% and persists for 1 second after canceled.
Yeah, that's the new additional functionality.
Right, but this was allowing you to get all sorts of other features and things and comboed with other talents. You basically had infinite Lurking Arms if you wanted to.
I can see that being a problem.
There's also his other new level one talent, Bacon, where his Fetid Touch, this is the one where you spread around the weighted pustules to complete a quest, they baked into that his ranged auto attack. However, his ranged auto attack animation of kind of like shooting a spine called Spine Launcher before baked in
right
out of his hand became a melee basic attack animation. So he lost that special animation. So seemingly in the background, Stukov is meleeing nothing in the air and you're taking damage. At range.
Yeah, that's a really big readability issue.
If you used a combination of shift moves, you could break Stukov in a fundamental way that dealt 2,000 damage to everybody. And since you can do it in an area effect, you basically did 8,000 damage across a team.
How did anyone figure that out?
It was actually pretty obvious if you went down the path of saying, how am I going to maximize this reactive ballista spore business?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So you get in try mode and you say, oh, cool. Wait, if I do this and then I do this and I put this talent with this and wait, what just happened? 8,000 damage to all these target dummies. This seems a bit much.
Let me go hit quick match.
Right. And then your one button might randomly disable, so you couldn't pull it off effectively anyway. So it was a bit messy. Also, as you know, I've got a sore spot for this, but everyone started getting real Windstriders cagey about it and be like, I know the bug. I'm not going to tell you the bug. You shouldn't know the bug. No one should exploit this bug but me. And so thank goodness they said, we're just going to turn Stukov off for the weekend and nobody gets to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. There's degrees of bugs, as we've talked about today. Hell, going back to Johanna with more damage getting just given to Falling Sword. It was clearly not game breaking. This, what we're looking at here with Stukov, is definitely one of the, on the more extreme end of the spectrum as far as bugs are concerned. So, some really exciting changes. We're just going to have to wait till next week to really see them shine.
Yep. Ultimately, this is going to be a buff to Stukov, it seems, because of his controllability of his reactive ballisto spores. However, yep. I'm also on a team with Cavalier Guest, which means anything that affects tank Stukov, I've heard great things about. If you ask others, biotic armors, armor reduction, things like targeted excision, root going down in duration at 13, these are nerfs to a normal Stukov player.
Yeah. Anything about Orphea other than, you know, the fact that they're buffing underpicked talents?
Yes. Well, so Orphea's just got one really, really, really good build. And you probably know it if you play Orphea. It has to do with that ancestral strength business. It
reminds me a lot of Kerrigan in that way.
So, like many of our other heroes, like Brightwing, for instance, with Invisible Friends, they are outrageously buffing certain talents to try to compete. Particularly Orphea's level 20 Eldritch Conduit is just amazing at what it does, giving you more spell power. So the big winner here is actually Engulfing Oblivion. This is your Crushing Jaws talent, which previously takedowns were set the cooldown to 5 seconds. Now reduces heroes' hits armor by 50 for 3 seconds.
Yeah, it used to be 25, so they're straight up doubling the armor reduction.
That's a lot of armor reduction.
It is a ton. It is an absolute ton. Doesn't help people just not standing in the Crushing Jaws, though, which I feel like is what happens every time I go Crushing Jaws.
Right, they get out of it, they run away from it, they have all game to practice now. It's also the problem with, like, Monster Within. Eternal Feast is already kind of doing what you wanted to in the first place, and getting Chaos isn't going to really compete with Eldritch Conduit. Each Chaos Consume increases Orphea's spell power by 3% up to 30. After reaching a maximum bonus, the spell power is increased by an additional 30%. You're competing with a 10-second lasting 60 spell power.
That's an hard argument to make, right? But I mean, it depends where the meta shakes out, I think, a little bit. Like, I'm pretty sure we're going to see, like, a lot of Blaze, and so that's a lot more slow. And then if Blaze is on your team and things are slowed, you got more of a chance to hit your Crushing Jaws on top of the fact that Blaze might be landing stuns. So, you know, if we get more slows, if we get more stuns, when Stukov's back in, there'll be more slows on the menu. You know, we might be heading into a world where you can actually land your darn Crushing Jaws, but
it's a tough sell for so many because of the 1v9, which is just a horrible phrase for a team game to be passed around. Everyone's in love with this right now. Every MOBA in the world, 1v9, I 1v9. It's like, congratulations. But that is the aspect that you're fighting here with Eldritch Conduit. Yes, you might have a Malfurion that lands a good rune. Yes, you might have a Medivh that time stops people just right into the Crushing Jaws. Or you just deal lots and lots of damage all by yourself.
Yeah. You don't put the control into the hands of your other teammates. You just keep it in yours, which has historically been what you want to do in Heroes of the Storm, where you're leveling up together. So, Raynor. Mr. Raynor. Got a preview last week. They're returning Ace in the Hole to its original functionality, but they also want to open up a basic attack build that isn't Gambit. Not lone, Gambit dependent. And so, the other thing that the dev comments had mentioned was the fact that basic attack damage is going up from 92 to 98, and penetrating rounds damage has also been increased. Ace in the Hole, back to the way it used to work. I don't know if it's just placebo for the fact that after the rework, I just didn't like Rainer at all. But Rainer just feels so unimpactful right now to me.
This is a very tame reversion. And I think it's easy for us to remember the insane Rainer from 2018.
And, oh, and the classic Insaner? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, Insaner. Exactly.
Yeah.
Nice. That was 30% bonus damage to heroes with Ace in the Hole. And that felt amazing. Naturally, it went down to 15%, and now it's gone to 10%. So damage reduced from 25% when it was just the penetrating round business previously and not all damage. But now at 10%, it's now all damage, which means, you know, Hyperion and Banshee are benefiting from this, which is really nice, which means technically if you're taking Ace in the Hole, you do kind of have like a 10 power spike with it. But it's still not the throughput that people are looking for in a world with Vala. However, veteran marksmen, in order to compete with Ace in the Hole's throughput, because you still have this baked in slow for 2.5 seconds on your Ace in the Hole, you have to get about 50 stacks of that. And that's attacking heroes. Now, some people will say, well, veteran marksman works on all things. It's increasing all my damage, but you only stack on heroes. So you got to go stack on heroes in order to get the benefit of not hitting heroes in that sort of way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also worth mentioning that the added damage on basic attack and penetrating round still doesn't bring them back up to where the damage were on either of those pre-rework. It's still
exactly.
Yeah. Basic attack is still lower than it was, and penetrating round damage is still lower than it was, even with this added back damage. And I feel it, man. The numbers are minuscule, but my God, like, it still just feels like I'm trying damn hard to keep up with every other damage dealer in the game right now.
I agree, but I don't have a ton of experience with it. I'm still only seeing Rainer on Battlefield of Eternity, and that's previously where I saw him exclusively.
Makes sense. All right, then. Well, let's talk about Vala. I'm sure we'll sort Rainer out at a later date, but they came for Fire at Will. The damage bonus per hero hit, if you took this W modifying talent, has been reduced from 4 to 2. They did add a quest, though, or additional functionality. A quest after hitting 20 heroes gain 40 additional multi-shot damage. So you will get a surge in damage relatively early in the game, because multi-shot can hit multiple heroes, and you only have to hit 20 of them. But, the potential, the damage potential here is way lower.
Right, so an infinite quest is still possible here. You will do overall way less damage, but suddenly completing that quest, you will hit exactly where you would have been very briefly until you get one more stack, and then you're tailing off again.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it feels that way. And so I've just been playing auto attack build, which is a giant gamble, not gambit. Although you did start it with a gambit talent. But it seems to bring more damage, at least in my personal experience, than going multi-shot Vala.
I think there is a place for multi-shot coming up, particularly when we think about those grenades refunding mana in a Braxis-y sort of situation. Those are going to be a lot of fun. And the slow is really nice, and the auto attack in the late game, and kind of maybe skipping that punishment and that sort of thing. It's all going to be perfectly normal. The puncturing arrow build made a lot of, you know, Vala elitists put out their pinky finger and go, well, I always hit my puncturing arrow, therefore this is an outrageous buff to me. Good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah. I want to convince my friends to double heal me on auto attack Vala. That's where I've ended up.
That's fine. We ran triple support Hanzo this week in our CCS game. That was a lot of fun.
Did you win?
Oh yeah. We won that. That was nice.
Okay, that's the important thing, because that seems strange to me. Were you the Hanzo?
No. That was Mockery. I was the offlane hogger.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, man. Hanzo is I don't think I will ever play him.
I'm just saying it's not only Vala. there are other double support, triple support options. And if you are a Cassia player or a Hanzo player and you don't think that you can be double supported, then you're not doing enough damage and you're doing something wrong.
That's fair. I guess my concern is that we will actually end up back in a multi-support meta.
If they continue to make things like the Stukov, it is very, very possible.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think we might be heading down that path.
The thing is, we don't have Uther leading the charge anymore, and I think that feels nice.
I like Vala being impactful. I'm just going to come out and say it. Can we cut that in half, that reduction on Fire at Will? Can we give one more damage back to it? Can we go from 4 to 3 instead of 4 to 2? See how it feels?
I'm curious to see how it works out. I think it should be a map pick now.
Okay. Fair enough. Want to talk about bug fixes?
Yes.
Cool. Anduin, Renew's effect is no longer lost by dying. That's good to know.
Yep. The heal would stop when he died.
Yeah, and same, Moral Compass's range bonus is no longer lost by dying.
I think that one just straight up disappeared, but I'm not particularly familiar with that one compared to Falling Sword Johanna impacting twice, which is why it was banned in the CCL over the weekend, and Mixing Fire cooldown reduction has been updated to match its tooltip on Lucio.
Malfurion Serenity no longer increases Tranquility's duration, and Serenity's tooltip has been updated to match its increased healing. This was also previewed via subreddit comments by Kofault, I believe. And then finally, Ragnaros's Meteor Bomb damage bonus is no longer lost by dying. So they fixed quite a few dying bugs with this patch.
Kind of makes sense that there were dying bugs, being that they went through and added in Gambit Talons.
Well, I think all of these dying bugs had to get out of the way for Stukov's make everyone die bug.
Could be. I only can assume that this is a very, very complicated game to update.
I was just trying to get a giggle out of you, man. Like I said at the beginning, like, I don't get too bummed out by bugs. I would much rather see changes at a good clip than playing it too safe for too long.
I agree. Let's do a breakdown, shall we?
Let's do it, yeah. So who got buffed? Who got nerfed? Who are we shrugging at and going, eh? And then there's just Stukov, who's just on the bench right now.
Yes, he's on the bench with his massive muscles not allowed to play for juicing.
Yeah, dude, I think this is like a very buff-heavy patch overall.
Very much so.
Yeah, more heroes got buffed than anyone else. So who falls under the buff category for you?
Blaze, Garrosh, Muradin, Stitches. And, I put Stitches here myself. Others might not agree, but I think that talent diversity for Stitches is going to be a lot of fun. And we'll see him on different maps there. Imperius, Anduin, Raynor, technically, though the feeling still isn't there. The nerf is, of course, easy mode Vala, depending on who you ask. If they're all multi-shot crazy, they might disagree with you. And then unknown, because it's just kind of bad talents, is Johanna and Orphea.
Yeah, the Orphea one's the strangest to me. The Johanna one, I still look as kind of a buff. I would personally put Stitches in the nerf column. I'd say Stitches got a nerf. I think it's relatively mild. But yeah, I get it. I've just been enjoying Heroes of the Storm not being updated for esports for so long that I might be a little grumpy about this one.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
I'm letting you, I'm cards on the table. That's kind of why I think that's why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling about Stitches. I'm really stoked to not have open disdain for Stitches for the first time really ever. And I'm just a little worried that we came for Stitches too soon, but who knows? Hopefully you're right. I hope you're right, Kyle. I'll put it that way.
He is a draft-dependent hero in that way, and it is very easy to mess up your team with his Stitches. I get you. If he loses power, the whole team can fall apart very easily. But I think the big winner is Blaze. That is project hero number one for me. My NGS team is animate that I get on it for next week, and that's what my weekend looks like.
I am not going to even attempt to feign a disagreement with you there. I think Blaze is looking mighty fine One might even say Blaze is looking hot. I'm sorry. I apologize for that.
It's all good. It's all good, man.
I did notice one question in the chat room a lot earlier that I wanted to hit before we left, and that was Kajitar asked, going back to the Johanna discussion, would a regular speed boost feel better? Is the mount portion of Divine Steed what feels bad? Are we getting hung up on the fact that it's a mount in Heroes of the Storm means something very specific? If it was just a regular speed boost, would we be as annoyed by this talent? I like this. It's philosophical, Kyle.
Unhindered by damage. Fundamentally, it's hard to think of it as a speed boost because of the unhindered by damage part, but still under the effects of slows. But I get what you're saying. You know, we sort of speed up our Johanna. Man, it's such a visual feast, though. The idea of a Crusader, Paladin, any sort of the Divine Steed is an essential part of advanced D&D Cavaliers. You don't have a Paladin without a mount. It's just what happens.
I'm thinking of this question more as like revisionist. Like, had we never gotten it in the first place and they just made this a speed boost, do you think we'd be complaining? How much of this is just our desire to look cool on a mount and for it to feel as cool as it looks?
I think a lot of it is. I think there we can just circle back to Yield Arthas and say, look how many opinions we have on a hero just because of who he is.
I think you're right. I would also just put forward that I think it's just not a great talent. It feels extremely unimpactful. The win rates I've seen aren't great. So it's just, to me, it's one of the most exciting and one of the most exciting on paper and most disappointing in practice talents I've seen in a bit, which, you know, it sounds a little harsh. It's very minor for me. I like the new Johanna quite a bit. But if we're having the conversation, yeah, Divine Steed, it's not doing it for me.
I think too, conviction ultimately steps on its toes. Gain 10% movement speed. Increase this to 20% while Condemn is charging up. That means you're going in. And if I'm not going to be completely booking it and awesome looking as I run away, I want to be using Divine Steed to get in there. And I have a talent that does just that. And it would be the button I would be pressing while I engaged anyway.
I'm being attacked by a cat.
Oh,
who just decided he wanted to jump up on the desk and mess with my microphone arm. So now I'm holding him.
He's declaring that the patch notes are done.
He is. So my cat decks are showing up. Can only mean one thing, even though this is not a thing we've ever had on the show. That means we're done. We're done talking about the patch, and we're done with this episode of Into the Nexus. Clearly. Good timing, Dexter. Good timing. And that's going to do it. Folks, if you want to be a part of the show, if you want to write in for episodes where we are not going change by change by change and spending the entire episode breaking down a patch, you can do so at itncast@gmail.com. If you are supporting us on Patreon, which means you went over to patreon.com/ITN and supported us with a dollar or whatever works for you. I'm not going to stop you from sending us, you know, 20, 30. You can input whatever number you would like, but it starts at a buck. We appreciate all the support that we get. And if you want to get in touch with us that way, you can do so, and you can skip the inbox entirely. So go check it out. Go join our Discord. Come play some games with us on our monthly game nights. And you can find all that and more over at patreon.com/ITN. Speaking of which, also a huge thanks to our producers, Declan H., Cheesy Bob, Chris K., Sean B., and Mike R. If you want to see more episodes of Into the Nexus, maybe you missed last week's episode where we talked quite a bit about Divine Steed, for example. You can go over to amove.tv. Every single darn episode of Into the Nexus can be found there. But before we go, Kyle, dude, where can people find you when you're not podcasting with me?
You can find everything I do over at kyleferguson.com, but also some special projects I do over at youtube.com/heroeshearth. This past week, I got to interview Hasuobs. You may know the name. It's been around for a while.
Hasuobs. Have I heard that name in StarCraft 2 before?
I know. And I got to talk to him about his Falstad play in the recent CCS game of a particular gruesome Game 5 versus Lost Vikings. Got to sit down with him over there. That'll be up very, very soon. As well as DMGI, the Learn to Play 5th Edition podcast for Dungeon Masters at about 15 minutes an episode. has concluded its season 8. 8 whole seasons of timeless D&D advice await you over there.
Damn.
New season coming in August.
Dude. Well, let me keep that train running and promote something that you do regularly, and I'm guesting on this weekend, which is There Will Be Dungeons. I'm going to finally be on There Will Be Dungeons. Kyle, I'm really excited, man.
Yes, Garrett's going to be joining us for our dragon hunt. He is a dragon slayer. I'm very excited for it.
You haven't DM'd for me since the first time I ever played D&D, which was your bachelor party.
Oh, wait, no, that's not true.
We did a one shot.
We did. There, the Black Dragon Pit. I guess I just love running dragons for you. What can I say?
You do love running dragons. Your bachelor party, though, was a lich. That's phylactery. Was in the corpse of a Tarrasque.
Yeah, well, it was my bachelor.
That one was effing cool. Your friend Rich, who I had only met for a short second before that, started cussing you out the second the Tarrasque skeleton was revealed, because he didn't trust you. He was certain that it was going to reanimate Nidus.
It was my bachelor party, after all. I was DMing. What can you say? Of course, I'm going to do exactly what I want.
To me, it couldn't have been a better introduction to Dungeons & Dragons. Anyways, that'll be this weekend. It'll be Saturday. I'll be guesting on that. You'll be able to find it everywhere podcasts can be found afterwards. Other than that, you can find this podcast and every single other one that I produce over at amove.tv. New episode of Angry Chicken is up. It's been up since Monday. Go give it a listen if you haven't heard it already. Lots of things changing over in Hearthstone. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of Into the Nexus. Until next time, everybody, good luck and have fun.
Take care.